The truth is, that is connected with our topic for today. I can tell you from experience working with girls your age for 30 years that people don't realize how quick you are going to get engaged and married and have children. And it's such a big thing and such a big change that it's worth thinking ahead about. I'm sure all of you are thinking at least, you know, what kind of husband you want. And that has a big effect on raising your children and educating your children. And everybody knows that in the modern world, you gotta work hard to make sure that your kids stay on the derech. And some of the girls are with me in Shelot and Emunah. Tila, Aiden, Ricky. So we had a whole shiur on this topic. Anybody wants to look on the internet, you can find on 5 tips on how to keep your children on the derech. It's around Pesach time. But what I want to learn with you in our last shiur together on Rav Kook, it's an opportunity to learn something, like I said, that you probably haven't thought about too much, but now's a good time to start thinking about it. Do you all have the sheets? The handout? Okay. Before we start and see Rav Kook, maybe I'll just do a quick review on the most important points that I mentioned then in Questions in Emunah. Freud writes that what's going to decide if a child is going to be religious or not is mainly if he has positive associations with Torah and mitzvot. So if your children find mitzvot to be fun, exciting, enjoyable, so that is going to be their association. Erickson, another famous psychologist, he says that it's also connected in general with your children's association with you. Do my kids want to be like me or not? Because everybody's basic comparison is, for girls, it's their mother. Do I want to be like Ima on this point? Maybe a little more, maybe a little less. On this point, I'll be like her. And if your kids like you, then they'll want to be like you on the most important issues. And regarding side issues like what type of glasses to wear, or what kind of haircut, or what kind of music they like, that's where they will express their individuality. Discipline's also important. Today in the modern world, it's very important to teach kids from a young age that there are do's and don'ts. Because today the standard of life is so high that kids are not used to hearing no for an answer. And then when they get older and the Torah tells them, you can't do this, you have to do that, I can't do this. Those are people who are going to have a lot of problems, not just regarding religion, but also regarding life. Right? Do you remember when we once spoke about the marshmallow test? The marshmallow experience, right? Where they found the kids who could, from a young age, contain themselves, that's the word I'm looking for, could contain themselves for 10 minutes, and that way, instead of getting one marshmallow, they will get two marshmallows. They traced these kids after 30 years. This is Stanford University. And they found that those kids who knew the secret of self-discipline, they were unbelievably more successful socially, scholastically, in their family life, in work, in everything that they did. And so the idea of teaching your kids self-discipline, where it could be something as simple as waiting 6 hours from meat to milk, right? It's not that you're saying, no, you can't have the chocolate, but learn to wait 6 hours. And somebody who doesn't have discipline from a young age is definitely going to have a problem when he's on his own and his mother and father and teachers aren't around, he's going to need that self-discipline to follow the Torah mitzvot. What we're going to do today, though, in Rav Kook, is in a totally different direction. Doesn't contradict, but it's another aspect. Let's look together in source 6. We're going to talk about Hadlakat Nerot, the lighting Shabbos candles. We'll start with that, because that's something especially miyuad, specific for women. And then we'll talk about also mezuzah and tzitzit. Let's look in source number 6, where the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Kav Gimel Amud Bet, tells us, Amar Rav Huna haragil b'ner havyin le'banim talmidei chachamim. Whoever is accustomed to having lights in their house, it's usually explained that they have a lot of lights on Shabbat, their children, their sons, will be Torah scholars. Now, obviously, there's a Kabbalistic side to it, but as Rav Kook is going to say, there's also a logical side to it. Source 7, Rav Kook in his commentary, Einaya. This is, again, on that Gemara. It's in Shabbat, the second chapter, paragraph 28. Hadimyonot shebein hatziyurim hamuchashim lidvarim haruchaniyim hana'alim. The connection between symbols and their spiritual symbolism, ra'ui shelo yiteh ha'adam lomar shem dvarim shel tohu. Don't make the mistake and think that symbolism is a waste of time. Very interesting. Rav Kook is relating here to Sifrut literature, where I have to admit, when I was in high school, I was very cynical about all the symbolism that our literature teacher told us, that water symbolizes life, and that light symbolizes wisdom. But if internationally, people, not just Jews, but Gentiles, in Australia, and in Africa, and in Europe, all over around the world, people use the same symbols, there must be something there. It's very interesting. You usually won't hear Torah giants like Rav Kook talk about literature and literary symbolism. But as we learned before together, Rav Kook is very big on the importance of culture. If you remember, we learned that Rav Kook said it's going to be culture, the Jewish culture, Israeli culture, the Israeli movies and sports and fashion designers. We need religious men and women to be movie directors, to be comedians, to be doctors, to be that, especially the cultural issues, that is what is going to influence the world. And just like today, it's the Jews in Hollywood who are influencing the world. Unfortunately, according to the priorities of Hollywood, Bezrat Hashem, when all of those Jews, all of you Jews, all the Spielbergs and Seinfelds, or their grandchildren, will be living in Yerushalayim, and we will influence the world through culture. So Rav Kook is saying that the culture in literature is significant. And he goes on to say that internationally, you all know this from the comic books, when somebody thinks of a good idea, they draw a light bulb, right? And the idea of light being connected to wisdom is very significant. So Rav Kook is, first thing he says, when the Gemara tells us that if you have a lot of lights, and especially you're careful to light Nerot Shabbat on time, many people, and if you have the custom in your family that your mother lights extra Shabbat candles, not just two, like for the number of children in the family, right? Have you seen that? So Oh, so that's a very common minhag. That this is where it comes from. And the first point, says Rav Kook, is that if light symbolizes wisdom, and we want a house of light, of wisdom, that symbolism could be a self-fulfilling prophecy, where not even consciously, maybe even just subconsciously, a house which is full of light symbolizes a house of wisdom, and that is where the children grow up. But in addition, Rav Kook adds that it's also logical. You have to remember, in the olden days, before there was electricity, what families had lights on over Shabbat all night or until midnight or even during the week? These were families where the people were learning Torah. In other words, a house which is full of lights also is very often, in the olden days, it was connected with a house where they learned Torah at night. Because that's why you would light lights in the olden days, to read, to learn. Let's jump to paragraph 11. Uvachshiro liknot al yedei hamuchashet hanetiyah lahavat ora shel Torah. If we want to help our children acquire wisdom and also to see our house as a house of Torah, yefutchu bo achanot ativiyot sheikaran talui beretzon pnimi amiti. We should make a conscious effort that even such a thing as the physical life in our house should be one which is associated with those who learn Torah. I would give today maybe a better example would be, because everybody has electricity, a better example would be Sfarim, books. A family that has books in the living room is making a statement to its children that they learn from a very young age, we are the people of the book. We value wisdom. We value Torah. And Rav Kook goes on to say that even if a person, for whatever reason, ad she'afim sibot mikriot hirchiku be'atzmo mi'ora shel Torah, say if a person, for whatever reason, himself does not learn Torah. Say a person didn't get a Torah education, or a person's parents couldn't afford sending him to yeshiva for a year, and a person's a baal tshuva and never really learned Torah properly. Nevertheless, he wants to give over that message to his children that even if I don't learn Torah for whatever reason, I want to learn. You see what Rav Kook is saying? To want to learn Torah, so learn Torah. But somebody, for whatever reason, can't learn Torah, at least want to learn, which is a certain degree of wanting. And when you leave your, for example, on Shabbat, every house has to make a decision, what lights are they going to leave on Shabbos? On a Shabbos clock, when are they going to go off? In our family, in this room where I learn, my library, I keep the lights on all Friday night and all Shabbat. Even if on Shabbat often I learn in the living room, I want my kids to know, and also I want to be able, if I need a sefer, there's light on. And if when you have a light on in the family library, everybody knows why it's there. So that even if theoretically you don't use that light, you're making a statement. And this is what Rav Kook is saying. When a person leaves lights on during the week, in the olden days, or today on Shabbat, to make sure that you can learn, your children pick that up, either it's because of that international literary symbol, but even more so, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that in a house that values Torah, the children are going to pick that up. And that is the connection, the first connection, between lighting Nerot Shabbat and having children who are Torah scholars. Yeah, Aiden.
Like a lot of the time, my mom will keep the lights on in like our basement. Is that, she'll leave, like, the timer on or whatever, like, in the basement, or, like...
And that's where the family gets together, in the basement?
Well, no, it's just, like, in case we want to hang out down there, or, like, uh-huh.
Okay, that is also a message. First of all, there's a message of some people plan ahead, others need one. You know, if you plan ahead and you say, hey, I might need something from the basement, of course, you'll leave the lights on there. And Dafka, teaching your children to plan ahead is something very, very important. You people will be amazed when you get it. You know what, I'll give you a piece of wisdom. It's our last shiur, so here's another piece of wisdom that'll last you for your whole life. Baruch Hashem, most of you probably have grown up in a bubble with Orthodox Jews, with families, with above average intelligence, above average motivation, above average idealism. And when you go out to university, you are going to come across people who are just, they're off the mark. You know, they don't do their homework. They're totally disorganized. These are not the type of people that you usually have associated with since you were born, right? But outside in the outside world, you know what? I remember in my high school class, everybody in our class was in the 92nd percentile of the SATs, 92% plus. And there were some guys who were not very intelligent. And it hit me that in Jewish schools, we usually are associated with families that stress scholastic, do your homework, study hard, but who the heck are the other 92%? And those are the people that you're going to meet on the campuses, and it's a good opportunity to appreciate the education that you got, and even something as simple as like what Aiden says, learn to plan ahead. You know, that's something that Jews, before Shabbat, if you don't plan ahead, you're going to be hungry or you're going to be tripping in the dark. And we Jews, there are a lot of things that we take for granted in our culture, in our society, that you will see that, you know what, even something as simple, Chazal say in the Gemara that a person should keep their shoes under their bed. And some of the commentaries ask, what is this symbolism of the mystical symbolism? And some explain simply, Chazal want to teach us to be organized. You should know where your shoes are. You should know where your pencil case is. You should be organized, be on the ball. And like I said, Baruch Hashem, all of you are on the ball. But keep it and appreciate what you got to make sure that your children also have the same upbringing. Let's go on to source number one, where Rav Kook deals with a similar idea. Here the Gemara Masechet Shabbat, and Daf Lamed Bet Amud Bet. This is in Ein Ayah, Perek Bet, paragraph Resh Kaf, 220. The Gemara says, Pligi bar Rebbe Yehuda v'Rebbe Meir, Chad amar ba'avon mezuzah, v'chad amar ba'avon tzitzit. The Gemara is talking about for what punishment may a person's children die during childhood? Chazal are not saying that every person who dies during childhood or their children is because of this, but there is a concept, and that's what Rav Kook is going to explain. So we see two opinions that will help us raise our children to be happy and healthy in body and soul. Nefesh bria biguf bari, if you remember that. Number one opinion is mezuzah, and the other opinion is tzitzit. What is the common denominator between these two mitzvot, mezuzah and tzitzit? Rav Kook explains in paragraph 2, Echad miyisodei hadrachim, איך להשריש חיבת התורה קדושתה וכבודה בלב הבנים. One of the best ways to educate your children to love a Torah, the holiness of Torah, honoring Torah, הוא שיכירו וידעו שאבי המשפחה הוא מתהלל ומתפאר בשם השם בתורתו ובמצוותיו. That the father of the family should be very proud of his Judaism. This is especially important. Most of you tell me that you're not going to be going to a midrashah or a Stern College next year. And it doesn't make a difference whether you're going to Queens, oh, there are a lot of Jews there, or Rutgers, or Binghamton, or wherever you're going. It's very important to be proud of your Judaism. When a person puts a mezuzah on his door, he is making a statement to anyone who passes back and forth in front of his door. It could be in the dormitory. It could be in a neighborhood where there are not a lot of religious or Jewish people. He's making a statement, I'm Jewish and I'm proud of it. The same thing with tzitzit. Tzitzit is something which, by the way, is meant to be visual. I remember in ninth grade when we were learning the Mishnah Brura, and it was my first crisis in religion, in faith, where we learned in the Mishnah Brura that a person should wear his tzitzit out. And it's an obligation. And the Mishnah Brura says, yeah, I know, in Chutz La'aretz, when a person is living among goyim, people are embarrassed of their tzitzit, and the goyim might laugh at your fringes, and they ask you, what are those things? But, he says, a good Jew is going to be proud of his tzitzit. And that's why the second thing that the Gemara says here, if you want to educate your children properly, have that Jewish pride. Yeah, I am proud to be a Jew, and I'm proud to wear my tzitzit out. And I remember in ninth grade, I asked around, why do people not wear their tzitzit out? And I was told, basically, like the Mishnah Brura says, that when people are living among goyim, they're embarrassed to look differently. And there I was, a 15-year-old boy, and I had to make a decision. Am I going to go after peer pressure, or am I going to go after the Mishnah Brura? And I went after the Mishnah Brura, and it was one of the major turning points in my life. And especially growing up in America, this issue is a lot more problematic for boys, by the way, for your brothers, than for you. Because when a boy has to walk around with a kippah, or how much more so tzitzit out, he might be ridiculed, and he has to make that decision. I remember when I was a kid, and we went to baseball games, and my parents taught us that when you go to a baseball game, you're better off wearing a baseball hat and not a kippah, especially if you go on the New York subway. And I remember thinking to myself, hey, on the one hand, they're telling me I'm a member of God's chosen people. I should be proud to be a Jew. And then they're telling me, but not always. And I felt the dissonance. I felt the hypocrisy. And this is a problem. Do you know, by the way, when the turning point was, Baruch Hashem, today it's a lot easier, after the Six-Day War. After 1967, the Jews in America also began having Jewish pride. And by the way, check this out in your families. I know it's true in my family and just about all my friends, that those who were born before the Six-Day War, almost all of them have and use non-Jewish names. Those born after the Six-Day War are not embarrassed to go around using a Jewish name. Like Eliana, like Tehila, right? And check it out, you will see that your parents probably, again, even themselves, if they were born before 67, there's a good chance that they go by their non-Jewish name. What changed? It was not an embarrassment to be a Jew anymore. You have to remember, after the Holocaust, where Jews were killed like cockroaches, people were embarrassed of their Judaism. I remember, even from my childhood, this is even after the Six-Day War, I remember my most embarrassing day of the year was going to Shul on Sukkot, with a lulav and etrog. Because the goyim, They have regular school on that day, right? Public school, parochial school. Anyway, on my way to Shul, there was a place called St. Gabriel's. And I would make a conscious decision to walk totally around St. Gabriel's so that the goyim will not see me with my lulav and etrog and laugh at me for being Jewish. And that is not a healthy situation that a person... You know what? Even just this week, I have a good friend in Teaneck who told me, I asked him what's going on with Corona, and he told me that they haven't opened up the shuls yet, and they do have some minyanim outside in backyards. So I said, once they're davening outside in the backyard, why don't they daven in the yard of the shul? And he told me without blinking an eyelash, he said, because people are scared that they're going to blame the Jews for spreading corona and that we're not listening to the social distancing and that even if we do have our masks on and we're keeping 2 yards away from each other, they don't want to be seen by the goyim outside of shul. Has anybody heard that in your communities? And I understand them. I understand them 100%. But that is just another reason why the Torah tells us to live in a Jewish land, in a Jewish state, speaking the Hebrew language, where the most normal thing in the world is to put a mezuzah on your door and to wear tzitzit out. Nobody blinks an eyelash. I remember one time, I went to give lectures in Chutz Laaretz, and on my way back, I was sitting next to me on the plane, an Israeli mother and teenage daughter. She looked like she was 15 or so. So they were summarizing their trip. So the mother says, "No, what did you think about America?" And she said, "You know what? The weirdest thing in America, they don't have mezuzot on their door." This is a non-religious girl. But for her, a non-religious girl growing up in a Jewish state, the most natural thing in the world is that you have a mezuzah on your door. You know where this comes up also? Does anybody remember, where does the Gemara say you're supposed to light Hanukkah candles? Anybody remember?
Outside.
Exactly. You're supposed to light them outside by the front door. Now, you were in Yerushalayim for Hanukkah. You probably noticed that a lot of people have these glass boxes where they light their Hanukkiah, right? Did you see that? That was the original takana. That's the original minag. But what happened? Over 2,000 years of living among goyim, Jews, either they were embarrassed, or they were scared the goyim would knock over the menorah, or anti-Semitism, maybe they didn't want to identify as Jews. And what Rav Kook is telling us is that if you want your children to be proud to be Jewish, you have to show it through things like mezuzah, through things like wearing your tzitzit out, because that is what children pick up. Kids have antennas. And they can see what their parents are proud about, and they can see what their parents are not proud about. Right? If your father comes home and says, "I'm making a siyum masechta, I just finished masechta Megillah," and he makes a big party, your kids will pick that up. Right? If it's something that you volunteer on the Chevra Kadisha, or you volunteer, whatever it is, your kids pick that up. That my mother, instead of just surfing the internet in her spare time, is either learning Torah or volunteering. That is more significant to children than anything in the world. And Bekitzur, this was always a problem. We got to finish up. But do you people know the original name of the Sefer HaKuzari? The classic work in Jewish philosophy, the original name of the Kuzari was the book in defense of the downtrodden religion. Because for 2,000 years, Judaism was a downtrodden religion. And people tried to hide their Judaism. And that is not conducive to raising children. We want to raise children who are proud of being a member of the chosen people. Somebody who doesn't understand how great it is to be Jewish, that's their problem. You want to explain it to them? You can. You don't want to? Don't. But don't be embarrassed of your Judaism. If you're in Rutgers and you see hordes of people, Palestinians or pro-Palestinians, even Jews who are pro-Palestinians, telling you Israel is bad and Israel is immoral and the Israeli army is immoral, it's hard to stand your ground. My personal opinion is don't waste your time on the goyim, but at least try and convince the Jews not to be anti-Israel. We have, without a doubt, the most moral army in the world. And by the way, anybody who checks it out objectively will agree. Nevertheless, you might find yourself having to defend that. Bekitzur, be proud Jews.